I'm Dr. Prepper. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the next minute or so with this preparedness radio presentation of A Lifestyle Moment by the Lifestyle Prepper, my Italian friend, Al Di Liberto.
Hello, everybody. I have a very special song I want to play for you today. The amazingly clever and fun song I'm about to play for you today is from an album called Color and Harmony. The music is written and recorded by a good friend of mine of many years, professional musician Larry Siegel, who lives in New York. I'm playing it for you to enjoy. It makes an interesting point about American English. For me, it has another message, too. Let's see what you think. The song's title? Everything Sounds Better in French.
In this country there's a patriotic crowd who want to make it English only allowed. You heard about it, no Spanish, not even a mention. And getting rid of all of the French, and in the future, in case there's an occasion, eliminating everything from the Asian languages. And while we're at it with such determination, drop all those words from all the German nations. So much of English would be extinguished. And do you realize how English would sound if domesticized? There'd be no more fondue and no more flambé, no champagne or Perrier, no mugugai panchamain or flan, no smorgasbord or filet mignon. Now think of what this means to those of us traveling by plane, boat, train or bus. No more bon voyage is to be said. Only good trip is permitted instead. And goodbye is goodbye, that's all we'll allow. No more adios, au revoir or ciao. No hasta la vista will we say. Americans will speak the American way. No cappuccino, no café au lait, no creme caramel, no creme brulee. No more latkes, no more kinnish, no more lox or gefilte fish. And no antipasto or entree. Americans must eat the American way. Now all of those films with foreign names would have to undergo a similar change. Play it again, Sam. Bogart will grouse in Casablanca, which you must call White House. And La Cage Folle, the birdcage, must be, oh, they already did that, pardon me. And forget about Moulin Rouge, that's dead. You'll have to say the Red Wind Mill instead. And no Kung Fu, no Tai Chi, no sombrero, no mariachi, no sushi, sashimi, wasabi, no wigwam, teepee, or kimosabi. Yes, that is American. But no origami or feng shui. Americans must live the American way. Now what if all those maps they print and sell would have to be anglicized as well? Think of all the changes throughout the South, like Boca Raton would become Rat's Mouth. And all of the Cajuns would really feel sick when Baton Rouge has become Red Stick. And in Texas, Body of Christ, we'll see on the map instead of Corpus Christi. And no more burritos, no enchiladas, no chili con carne or tostadas. No Ramadan, Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa. In fact, I retract that whole last stanza. And all we'd have left is April Fool's Day if we have to celebrate the American way. Now all of this will hit us like a flood. Instead of sangria, we'd have to drink blood. The nouveau riche would be the new wealth. Instead of Gesundheit, all we shout, health. And all the Latin bands will play music called sauce. Your head honcho would just be your boss. And forget about all of that French you were taught. Even if it has that certain I don't know what. To every kind of pasta we'll say bye-bye. In fact, every dish that ends with an I. Even Hannibal Lecter's meals will be scanty. Keep the fava beans, lose the Chianti. And Mardi Gras is just a fat Tuesday when we celebrate the American way. Now finally, when two-thirds of our nation are dying from monolinguistic starvation, they will take the situation in hand all the way to the highest court in the land. And with a split down 4-5, once again they'll shock everybody's lives when the Supreme Court rules from the bench. Everything sounds better in French. Ha ha! I mean, what a tour de force this will be here in the land of the free. Ooh la la!
Isn't that a great song? I wanted to play it for your enjoyment. Can you come up with another reason why I played it today? If you'd like to get a copy of the album with this song on it, go to www.larrysiegel.com. That's Larry Siegel, spelled LarrySiegel. That's all I've got to say today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Al, for sharing that lifestyle moment. Listeners can discover more about health discount dental and medical plans for preppers and all other American families at SaveMoneyOnHealthcare.com.
Hello, welcome to Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host, John. Hi, John.
Hi, Sierra. Hello. How are you doing?
How's it going this week?
Good. Going very well this week.
Good.
It's going actually just going on the Society for Barefoot Living and saw some posts about shopping and did a lot of that this weekend. It was a real good week.
Awesome. I was barefoot most of the week, but I actually did need to, I needed to put shoes on this week, so I was helping my grandparents fix their roof, and up on top of a roof, it's very hot. That was unpleasant.
Yeah.
I had gloves on my hands, too. It was, yeah, really quite unpleasant.
But that's when you should wear shoes,
yeah.
When you have to wear
yeah.
gloves. I mean, it's the same
exactly.
thing.
Same idea.
Mm-hmm.
We've got lots of tweets from the barefoot community this week. Dr. Daniel Howell at Barefoot Prof tweeted his book, The Barefoot Book, 50 Great Reasons to Kick Off Your Shoes. It just wrapped up its month as Book of the Month in the Barefoot Book Club group on Facebook. And the Book of the Month for August is Born to Run by Chris McDougall. So, great books by barefooters about barefooting. At Topaz006 says, if you're not barefoot, then you're overdressed. Kyla Lindsay says, there is no worse feeling than running through blazing hot sand barefoot. Hashtag feet are scorched. Blazing
or
hot
on a roof.
Feet. Or on a roof. Or like anywhere that you could injure your feet. Not a pleasant sensation at all. I made the mistake of walking. So I went to a doctor's appointment to get a well check because I'm, you know, got chronic health conditions, have to get blood work regularly. Walk up to the clinic and then back to my house is a 2-mile round trip, maybe more. The way I went, it was not exactly a direct route. And my feet are a little tender from walking on asphalt. It was 33 Celsius yesterday, which is, hang on, let me Google what's that in Fahrenheit. 91.4 Fahrenheit. So it was hot. And
oh,
I was out there for... Yeah, I was out there for quite a bit. Hot feet,
yep.
Not pleasant. Joe Parba says 15 minutes barefoot in London, and he's got a picture of what just walking 15 minutes barefoot in London did. The pads of his toes and basically the parts of your foot that would touch the ground causing a footprint when you walk, all black and covered in filth. London's apparently a very dirty city.
I often wonder in cities, if everyone was going barefoot, would you have those same issues? Is a lot of that filth coming from the shoes? Running off?
That's an interesting thought. I think a lot of the blackness actually comes from the bits of rubber that come off of tires on the roads.
Right.
So when you cross the road, you get that on your feet. So I think that's a lot of the blackness. But, I mean, even inside, like when I go to West Edmonton Mall, my feet are just black. And Walmart, just black. And I know Walmart, a lot of the time their stores get residue from the cart's wheels on the floors. So that might be it. But I mean, we live in a dirty world. Cities are really dirty.
But again, that's something that might be regional because I was in a Walmart for well over an hour, like an hour and a half, and I was just kind of dusty.
Well,
Less than
that's
half.
maybe, yeah, it might be regional because the dirt in Alberta is black. Like it's black dirt. But in Florida, a lot of the dirt is comprised of sand.
Right.
So maybe the color of the dirt people are tracking in has something to do with it.
Or it burns off your feet before you get in.
Yeah.
But it was a pleasant day.
We have another great tweet here from Nike Training. Someone tweeted and asked them, DCJ1 tweeted and asked, what is the key muscle group that will have the biggest impact on balance? And Nike Training, Nike being the shoe company, replied, the bottom of the feet, actually. So I train barefoot while flexing leg muscles from the hip down.
There you go.
Let's just bask in the glory of Nike telling you to be barefoot. So
Actually, there's another shoe.
even the shoe companies know.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's another shoe company. I'm just failing to remember which one it was. It was just a large one that put out an article saying that barefoot is really the best way to go. But of course, then they went into when you have to wear these and everything. So
So Nike, with
it's
all their
maybe.
expensive exercise shoes, are telling you it's actually better to train barefoot.
Well, they do their research to see that they're actually doing research on feet, so they're going to learn the truth.
They're going in the right direction. And Nike actually is becoming quite barefoot friendly. They have what they call yoga shoes. And I own a pair. I wouldn't really recommend them if you already are a barefooter, but if you're wanting to get the barefoot feel and you're scared of germs or whatever might be holding you back, they're called yoga shoes. They're about $60, which, I mean, compared to other shoes is pretty about par. I think they're kind of ugly. They look like ace bandages wrapped around your feet. But they have like a soft inside, and then they've got rubber soles. They're meant only for indoor use, but they are, they're there to protect you from whatever might be on the ground. So that's, yeah, just
Well, you should.
Nike yoga shoe. If you just Google it, or even go on the Nike store and then just type in yoga shoes, that'll pull it up.
It's funny you mentioned the germs because I actually had a doctor's appointment this week. It was nothing more than checkup type thing. And I had quite a long conversation with the doctor, and the doctor was the one promoting that, there's a phobia in this country against germs and how we actually need to have germs and bacteria and be exposed to it. And he even she, I'm sorry, even said, at my age, I'm remarkably healthy. She said, a lot of people at my age have like 20 different medicines they're taking. So I
Yeah.
kind of wonder, if there's a tie in there.
Well, my parents are about your age. You've got quite a bit more life experience than I do. My dad mostly wears minimalist shoes, and he was out like hiking or something, I don't know, with one of his friends who has already had a heart attack and is on a couple different prescriptions. And so my dad's just like outpacing him. And my dad's not in very good physical shape. My dad is could probably be considered morbidly obese, but he's got a lot of strength and stamina. So they're like hiking or biking, I don't remember which. And his friend, who's also morbidly obese, asked, what medicine are you on? Like, you're running circles around me. And he's, what are you talking about? I'm not on anything. And, it might have something to do with the fact that his joints and bones are not being all mucked up by high lift shoes. High lift shoes being anything that has more than 1 millimeter of what's called a drop, so the difference between where your toes are and where your heels are. So the higher the lift, the more the drop. Basically, the more of an angle your foot is at when it hits the ground, the more joint problems you're going to be having. That's why so many people sprain their ankles when wearing high heels. I mean, yes, if you have extraordinarily strong ankles and feet already, then, you know, you might be able to run in heels like that lady in Jurassic World. But most people don't have that
special
strength because
effects.
They're always in those shoes. Oh, no, she was actually doing it. That wasn't special
okay.
effects.
Okay.
I looked into that extensively because I didn't think that was real. And that actress
yeah.
was actually running in the high heels.
Yeah. But I'm sure she was doing a lot of damage.
Oh, yeah, that terrifies me. Personally, I would have taken the heels off, but I mean, I've had forum discussions about this, and the consensus was because she's used to wearing the heels and because she has the ankle strength and support from wearing heels frequently, she's probably better off running in the heels than by taking her shoes off and having soft, exposed feet stepping on whatever it was that might be in the park. You know, dinosaur excrement and whatnot.
Yeah, I was thinking she might be afraid that she's going to get a dinosaur hookworm and end up with something like a boa constrictor inside of her.
Maybe. Who knows? Who knows?
Too funny.
We do have a couple more tweets. Amy Gray says, all country music is either about dogs, beer, trucks, mud, tight blue jeans, being barefoot, and ex-girlfriends. How is that enjoyable? I enjoy listening to songs about being barefoot. I don't know about you guys. Those are my favorite ones.
Yeah.
Michaela Hannigan says, driving barefoot is the only way to drive. We've got quite a few about driving barefoot this week, actually. Queen V says, summer is driving barefoot in your swimsuit. Daniel Howell again, do you like going barefoot? Do you know going barefoot in public is legal and safe? Find out more at barefooters.org, which has links to show that there's no laws against driving barefoot or any health codes. And Mission Wrecker says, contrary to what many people believe, it is legal to drive barefoot. So lots of barefoot driving posts this week. I think that might be in response to a couple different police departments posting on their Twitter, kind of like a MythBuster series, that it's not illegal to drive barefoot. There are no laws anywhere in the U.S. and Canada about driving a automobile while barefoot.
Right, and I think I mentioned before that I've noticed a lot of people just in casual conversations that is something that they're comfortable doing. It seems like it is something that's trending a little bit. So it's
yeah,
trending in the right
well,
direction.
I think people are talking about it more because, you know, it's summer, you go to the beach, it's not exceptionally pleasant to have sand inside of shoes. So a lot of people will just drive barefoot back from the beach and then put their shoes on once their feet are dry and all the sand has fallen off, which completely understandable. I mean, I haven't driven with shoes on in almost 5 years because you can feel the pedal so much better. And even before I was a barefooter, going to church, I would wear heels to church because I'm apparently a glutton for punishment. But I'd wear heels to church, and I would take my heels off and drive barefoot on the way to church and back. And I had lots of friends driving to prom. They didn't want to drive in their heels, so they would drive barefoot.
Yeah, definitely. It's something I think we'll see an increase in because as people realize and really logically think about it, it's just like if you're putting your hands on the steering wheel. Would you put
exactly.
equivalent of a shoe on your hands and drive it on the steering wheel, you'd be insane to do that. Well, we're doing it with the pedals.
I'm not going to say that it's totally the same because I wear gloves in the winter to drive because my steering wheel gets really, really cold. And so I don't want to be touching that cold, freezing steering wheel and lose feeling in my fingers. Because, I mean, it takes a good 20 to 30
right.
minutes for my vehicle to heat up. But at the same time, I have less control in these big puffy gloves over shifting into different gears.
Exactly.
I can't feel
and
as
again,
much.
With gloves, you do have some tactile sensation. You know, you can grab onto the steering wheel and everything. But with the majority of shoes, it's just like a hard piece of rubber between you and whatever you're touching. So.
Yeah, typically all you can feel is the inside of the shoe.
Exactly. So, people wouldn't do that on the steering wheel. I agree. A glove is just like we've mentioned before. It's a tool, just like shoes are a tool, and they should be used.
Exactly. Exactly. So I had an interesting experience this week that I wanted to chat about. I went to Cabela's with my husband and father-in-law. We were going on a fishing trip, so we went to Cabela's and we got a bunch of fishing stuff. And then some of the stuff we didn't like, so we went back to return it. And they had a foot scanning Dr. Scholl's machine thing. And it's like, if you stand on it, it'll tell you what, basically what orthotic insoles you need. So I, just out of curiosity, I wanted to see what it would say about my feet, because I did, about a year ago, I saw a podiatrist who told me my feet are perfectly healthy, but because of joint problems I have, she recommended I get orthotics, which is why I bought the Nike yoga shoes to put the orthotics in. So I, a year later, wanted to see what it would say. And it said, I have a lot of high pressure in my feet and that I have a low arch. And so it recommended an orthotic insert for that. But then it also said, learn more about what causes this. So I went to look at what causes the, you know, high pressure in your feet. Because, I mean, I can feel that. My feet hurt when I've been walking too long because there's a lot of pressure in them. And it has nothing to do with my feet, actually. It's because I'm overweight. This isn't just something that Dr. Scholl's is saying. This is, you know, things that my family doctor has been saying to me for a while. You know, you need to lose some weight. You're going to get diabetes and heart disease. You need to lose weight. Not that I'm, you know, like huge or anything, but I do classify as borderline obese. And so, I mean, for my health, I do need to lose weight. But I just thought it was interesting that the alternative that it gave me to buying these orthotics was to lose weight, you know, and lose weight and I'll be fine. And it is something that I never really noticed a lot of pressure in my feet when I was thinner. So before I had my son, that's kind of when this all started, was when I got pregnant with my son. And from then on, because that was when I ended up putting on a lot of weight. But it makes me wonder, you know, what are the alternative treatment plans for these things that are being treated with orthotics? Because there's also been studies that orthotics permanently disfigure your feet, that you'll never be able to walk again without them. What are your thoughts, John?
That's probably what they're hoping for. I know that was kind of
a lifelong customer.
Exactly. I've lost quite a bit of weight. I still have a ways to go, but I do feel better with the weight off. I mean, it's just, I think that's a pretty much given, you know. We're a machine, and the more pressure we put on it, the more we're, you know, causing friction and everything else. So I also, you know, I don't know how much trust I put in those machines for being super accurate. I mean, I don't, maybe they are, maybe they've really done their research and figured it out, but you know, I tried one once, and I'm even trying to remember what it told me, but of course I didn't pay attention to it. But my feet feel fine, so I'm not worrying about it.
Exactly. And it's typical that when your feet feel fine, you don't really think about it. But a lot of people that don't go barefoot regularly, they'll try on a different shoe, and then all of a sudden their feet hurt like crazy. And they think it's because it's a more minimalist shoe. I remember as a teenager, I would go, you know, go to Disney in flip-flops. I lived in Florida, so we went to Disney a lot. You know, just 2 hours away. But, you know, I'm there in flip-flops, walking around a park all day. There's been people that, with their little pedometers, you walk between 10 and 20 miles when you're at Disney, and you go up about 10 to 20 flights of stairs between going up the ramps to go to the lines. And so it's a lot of stress on your feet. And usually by the end of the day, my arches were just aching, because the rest of the time I was a student athlete and would not want to carry my running shoes around with me, so I would just wear them to school, which probably wasn't the best thing I could be doing for my feet in retrospect, but all of that support from the shoes was locking those muscles down so that they couldn't work and that they didn't need to work, just like if your arm's in a cast. And it kind of makes them weak. Not kind of, it does make them weak. And so then, you know, I go walk 20 miles in flip-flops. Of course my feet are going to hurt, you know. It'd be like if you just got your arm out of a cast after 8 months and tried to lift weights for 2 hours. It's going to hurt. The same concept.
Exactly. And it to me is always amazing how people distance those concepts, things that they know are logical and make sense for other parts of their body. It's a whole new game for the feet for some reason. Real quick, funny story. I mentioned I went for, you know, a checkup, and I'd seen this doctor before, and I'd shown him my flip-tops before. I went to the dentist before barefoot, but the doctor's office, for some reason, was a place I just really didn't. And when I walked in, she asked, do I have my flip-tops on? I said, no, I've got regulars. So why not? So that was kind of, I was taken back, to be honest. She said, they look like shoes. So I was very taken back, happily. So, of course, next time I will do that.
I'm still surprised, though, when you go into public, the people that, like, stare at your feet. Right before the show, I was out running some errands with my mom and my son, and there were these kids in the store just, like, ogling my feet. Like, they've never seen bare feet before or something.
Well,
everybody has them.
It's something that's just, for some reason, considered a taboo or not a social norm. Hopefully what we're doing right now, and our group will, you know, work to change those things. But it really has turned into something where you must be, you know, a derelict or, you know, mental problems or, you know, there's a whole list that, you know, that would go along with it to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you do your market studies on Twitter where you search terms with barefoot, like you barefoot ratchet, barefoot socially acceptable, trying to think of another one, barefoot crazy. Let's see what it says for barefoot and crazy.
Put in gross, you know. Or put in, I've done that before, and of course it comes back with sun or unsanitary and some other.
Yeah, lots of barefoot and crazy. Don't go crazy and run barefoot. Barefoot and crazy. Barefoot with crazy hair. Like, it's, yeah, there's lots of negative. Like, here's walking around Boston barefoot. Add it to the list of crazy things I've done. People think you're crazy. They think you're homeless. They think you're a hippie, which, not necessarily a bad thing to be a hippie, but, you know, I'm not actually a hippie, you know, just because I go barefoot and, you know, doesn't make me a hippie. There are arguably other parts of my life that, add them all together, I could be considered. My friends call me a new age hippie. But, I mean, I don't identify as a hippie. You know, just because I don't like shaving my legs and I love making tie-dye shirts and I make all of my, you know, clothes that I can and have a garden and cloth diapers. I'm not a hippie.
No, they're just in denial. But actually, when you think about the term hippie, what does it exactly mean? It was when people were doing things that were different, that were challenging social norms, you know. So maybe it's not all that bad.
Well, a lot of hippie culture is actually, I mean, yeah, it's all that, and the long hair and rejecting cultural norms. But they also, a lot of hippie culture is hallucinogenic drugs. And I'm not
No, I will agree with you. That's part of it. Yeah. But to be,
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good without that. Hippies are like the opposite of hipsters.
Which
I think is funny because they're so close together. We do need to take an ad break. When we come back, we're going to have our guest this week, Barefoot Alex, who just completed a mostly barefoot across the continent run. He ran from the East Coast to the West Coast. And so he's going to be on shortly, and we're going to chat with him about that. So make sure you stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose, Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals. A political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. Annabella Semperma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just cloned the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
See the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at shadethemotionpicture.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio, where we have a 24/7 chat room where you can come and share what's going on in the world with people of like mind. Anything and everything against the New World Order. Dial 347-324-3704 to catch our live show. Beginning at 9 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Friday till midnight, and 9 to 9 on Saturday and Sunday. Take us to the beach. Take us to the park. Take us on a walk with the dog. Only on Freedomizer Radio.
Lindsay Williams on Freedomizer Radio.
Seems things are happening so fast now. And again, I want to thank you for the privilege of allowing me to be with your audience and with you tonight. Everyone out there in your listening audience, they should listen to you every single day. Don't you miss a program. Lord bless. Everybody set that spiritual house in order. It's the most important thing out there. Thank you, and good night.
Shalom, and praises to our Father. Now that the Ruach has revealed that we are in Babylon, it is important that we continue to keep seeking the Father's truth. The best way is to ask that the Ruach HaKodesh to lead us, and with that, let us reason together and listen to the Sound Doctrine Spiritual Ministries Fellowship program right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Join host Betty I. Emanuel, Asad Batia, and our researcher extraordinaire, Iman Prophet, every Sunday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 a.m. Central, as we present the truth according to the set-apart scriptures. As always, stopping by is the occasional guest and set-apart music that honors Father Yah. You can also listen in to the show at 347-324-3704 or join us in our chat room at freedomizerradio.com. Stay in the will of the Father. Peace to your hearts and homes. Shalom.
Welcome back to Barefoot is Legal Radio. We are joined now by our guest, Barefoot Alex. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Sierra, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on today. Thank you very much. Yes, all is well.
Hi, Alex. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate what you've been doing.
I really appreciate you saying that. Everything is going very well right now, and I feel very blessed to have this opportunity to speak with everybody today.
So for those listeners who don't know much about Alex, he is a barefoot runner. He does lots of long distance running, some of them known as ultra marathons, and he just ran across America. And Alex, could you tell us a little bit about that journey that you just completed?
Yeah, actually, Sierra, this is a pretty synchronous moment because not long ago, I think it was in December, we were both on Huffington Post, and this was all prior to the journey. So now that the journey has concluded itself, it feels like everything has come full circle. The adventure that I just took part in was called Race Across USA, which was an event organized by two people in California, Darren Van Soy and his wife Sandy, to run the length of the United States, a 3,080-mile journey from California to the White House to raise awareness about childhood obesity. So we had the opportunity not only to just run, to race, but also to electrify the hearts and minds of young people to get out there and exercise and to be really stoked about doing it.
Approximately how much of this run were you able to complete barefoot?
Yeah, that was a question that I ran through my head before taking the journey's first step. Mentally, I wanted to complete the whole 3,080-mile journey completely barefoot. But I ran into some hardship after the first 3 days of running, and I realized that my body was going to be the one in charge of this journey. And it turned out that by tuning into my body, I was able to run 1,000 miles barefoot and the remaining 2,000 miles in Luna sandals.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit about... Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Luna sandals?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the one of the major influences in my transition to barefoot running was after reading the book Born to Run. And it's like a cult classic for all barefoot runners and all minimalist footwear enthusiasts. So Barefoot Ted, while he was in the Copper Canyons in 2000s, he met Manuel Luna, who was very paramount in revealing to Ted that, you know, yeah, if you're not barefoot, having some sort of footwear on your feet, it can be a tool. So he saw that the Tarahumara were wearing a Huarache sandal, which is reminiscent to the Jesus sandal or the Roman, like the Roman Colosseum sandal. And he brought that idea back to the USA with him. He developed the idea to the point where he felt pretty good about sharing his prototype sandals with the world. And it was right around 2012 that I started really realizing that, wow, if I'm not barefoot, all I need is just a sliver of protection on my forefoot to ward off any type of nuisance on the ground, any type of, you know, small stone or whatnot. All I need is a bit of material on my foot so I could traverse terrain without any interruption. So the for the Luna sandal, it's a Vibram outsole. Vibram Italy makes the outsole, and it has a simple lacing that goes over top that you can modify to your foot specifically. So the reason why I enjoy Luna so much is that the footbed contorts to the foot, it molds to the foot, and it's also lightweight. You can put them on real fast, you can take them off real fast, and you're given the ability to run on terrain that would be maybe more of a challenge if you were barefoot.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like it was a great help to you. I was wondering, have you heard of Jake Brown and his attempt to run across America completely barefoot that he's currently underway?
Yes, Barefoot Jake and the Unrun, yes. Barefoot Jake and I have actually been in communication the last couple of days. He's right now, I believe, currently in Missouri and making his way to Ohio, which is the state that I'm currently in. So he and I were both super stoked about the opportunity to run together. Jake's performance so far has been absolutely phenomenal, and I really am trying to wrap my mind around it. After completing, you know, the 3,000 mile distance myself, it's like to be completely barefoot for the whole thing. It's one thing to think about it, but to actually see some of the shoulders of the road that Jake's on, they have to be completely craggly, super bouldery, uncomfortable surfaces. So right now, you know, I'm sending good vibes to Barefoot Jake because he's doing something that is truly, truly remarkable.
Oh, absolutely. And I just can't even, I mean, he's running an average of 30 miles a day right now. And it's the peak of summer, and he's running all these like hot asphalt surfaces. I mean, I walked 2 miles barefoot on asphalt yesterday, and that was painful. I mean, I can't even imagine, like, he's so brave. I hope he does end up getting in the Guinness Book of World Records, because this is incredible.
Even the 1,000 miles is hard for me to wrap my head around. I mean, just like Sierra mentioned, a couple miles, and I think both Sierra and I are more conditioned than most people would be. But even after a few miles, especially the forefoot definitely starts to get rather tender for me.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, and thorns too. They just, these little weeds that are along the side of the road. It's just brutal.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to do.
Yes. Yeah. The one thing that comes to mind in terms of the biggest nuisance, especially in the southwest portion of the country, have you ever heard of like goat heads?
Yeah. Those are the bane of most barefooters' existence.
Yeah. So those goat heads were littered all across the route for the majority of the southwest portion of the country. So There was a lot of portions of the route where I had to hug the white line as much as possible because I saw that it was pretty much the majority was free of debris. But there was oftentimes when there was just so many goat heads that you would have to use the actual road, being mindful, of course, of traffic, but you would have to be on the road if you wanted to get onto any type of surface that was barefoot friendly. But I wasn't.
Right.
Yeah, I was using any part of the road that I could to be comfortable on.
Right, and for those listeners who don't know, goat head, they're like these sticky, thorny balls that grow on weeds, and they're sharp enough that they can pop bicycle tires. Like, they're brutal. They're awful. Very, very sharp.
Note
yeah, so stepping on that would be horrible.
I wanted to... balls, and they're bad enough. I can't imagine.
Oh yeah,
things.
Yeah. There's all kinds of hazards out there, but like you said, Alex, by being aware that they were there and watching where you were going, you were able to avoid them for the most part.
Yeah. There was a few instances when there was just such a plethora of goat heads or maybe it was, you know, sharp little twigs or other little tiny stones, little shards of glass that people had discarded and tossed out their car, beer bottles, whatnot, et cetera, that you really had to be mindful in the sense that, yeah, if you step on something, you still have to consider that this isn't just you're going home and then you can just rest up and maybe take a couple days off to heal up your feet. No, the nature of the event was that you would have to continue to run a marathon distance for 140 days. So if you blew a proverbial, you know, flat tire stepping on a goat head, then that could very well jeopardize the entire event, the entire crossing. So the idea of having a minimalist footwear, like a Luna sandal, was absolutely paramount to my success. And also it brings into awareness how important Jake's crossing is. He's going through these things, but he also has the condition, the warm weather condition. So being on asphalt that's heated up to roughly 100 degrees and warmer, and then when you mix in this road debris, it's like, man, you know, Jake is probably developing the ability to hover. That's what I'm thinking.
I should hope so. Otherwise, he might get quite burned feet.
Because that asphalt, you know, if it's 90 or 100 out, it's going to be like 140.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, asphalt can be quite brutal. So while we're on the topic of these charity runs that barefooters are doing, Alex, I wanted to ask you what you thought of non-barefooters who decide that they're going to go barefoot or run barefoot to raise money for a cause. Do you feel like that's a gimmick? Do you feel like that's kind of an offense to your culture? Or do you feel like that's a great way to get people exposed to going barefoot? What are your thoughts on this?
That's a really great question. Initially, what comes up is that I feel that by being barefoot in public to public perception, it's a bit of a gimmick. It's a gimmick because maybe it's a sight that's not seen, the concept's not understood. So to the public eye, it can seem that maybe it's a means to be different without really understanding the effects. Now, my hopes are that if anyone is deciding to be barefoot to raise money or draw awareness for a specific cause or a purpose, then they use their understanding of being barefoot or what it means to them to kind of illustrate to a wider range of people the importance of what being barefoot is. Hopefully the idea of being in touch with the ground, to be able to relate what landing lightly means, what's the purpose of landing lightly, what does it mean to be aligned, why is posture important in running. Hopefully in unison, Maybe their cause can coexist with the benefits of being barefoot, but I think in terms of if you're just doing it for a gimmick, I have a feeling that you might injure yourself if you've been wearing shoes all your life, and then all of a sudden you're trying to. Hopefully there's an intention that's past just being frivolous and doing it for kind of just to be in the spotlight. Yes.
And do you feel like it's kind of like stealing the barefoot culture at all? There's been a lot of talk about cultural appropriation in the news lately with, you know, white people wearing traditionally more African hairstyles. Kylie Jenner got in trouble with a lot of black activist groups by wearing cornrows, saying that it's, you know, it's not just about her hair, it's not just about Kylie Jenner, but the fact that she's getting attention for something that is an identity thing for another culture. Do you feel like that has any applicability to these types of gimmicky charity barefoot runs?
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess to go back to the culture appropriation in terms of hair, it's like for the last 2.5 years, I decided that I was just going to allow my hair to grow naturally. So 2.5 years later, I have what, you know, many deem as dreadlocks. You know, my hair is locked up naturally. And somehow I've started becoming more aware that, yeah, there's a cultural appropriation with, you know, Caucasian folks that are that are growing their hair and saying that it's a disrespect to, you know, to other cultures. And, you know, I'm so outside of that. It's just like, you know, do your thing. And if you own it, then you own it. And I think the same applies to my view, my perception for being barefoot. You know, there's definitely purists out there, and I'm not sure if some of the purists would consider me to be a purist, because I wear five fingers, I wear Luna sandals. So I very much could be perceived in some people's eyes as somewhat of a gimmick, or someone that is kind of exploiting being barefoot to you know, to boost my personal gain. But if that same purist was to ask me what it means to be barefoot and really understand where I'm coming from, that it's a lifestyle that resonates with my body, that my body has become alive through being barefoot, that kinder touch with the ground, feeling those electromagnetic pulses coming up through my soles when I'm earthing, then maybe we can all grow as a collective to realize that, yeah, maybe it's more upon, you know, independent individual motivation. Now, if someone's exploiting it, I think it's pretty easy to find out, because I feel that there's an air or a vibration of mockery. If somebody's getting on and kind of giving these, you know, maybe they just got it in the journey, they're not really presenting themselves in the way that I feel is congruent with the barefoot community, then yeah, for me personally, I think it's a disrespect, and I think it's a slap in the face. But for somebody to kind of just jump into it, you know, I'm going to be there first to support them, because I think that's really cool what they're doing. I don't know if they have the mindset right off the bat of what they might stumble across. You know, you can't just throw off your shoes after 20 years of wearing shoes and expect to be able to go out and run 20 miles without getting injured, without stepping on something, without being sore on the top of your foot. You know, those muscles are going to fire up, and you're going to be in a bad spot. So, you know, if you're going to talk the talk, make sure you know how to walk the walk.
Absolutely. For any of our listeners who might want to transition into barefoot running, what would you recommend that they do?
Yeah, I'm a firm believer of, that's a great question. I'm a firm believer in the research, the information that I did during my research about 5 years ago, and it came from barefoot Ken Bob Saxton, who said, if you're going to start this journey, start it on a hard surface. Start it on a surface like pavement, because when you do that, you're allowing yourself to develop the muscle memory of how to land lightly. And if you develop the muscle memory on a surface that is as unforgiving as pavement, then really start to land as gently as possible right off the get-go. I noticed that when I'm in a surface like grass or on sand, that I'm landing just a fragment more. My impact is just, I feel that I give myself that false sense of security on those softer surfaces. So for anybody that's looking to make the transition, I really encourage you, though it may seem counterintuitive, I encourage you to start just with a gentle walking on a surface like pavement, on a surface like concrete, just to allow yourself the opportunity to get in contact with a hard surface. Watch and notice how your body interacts with that type of surface. And then gradually, very slowly, build up speed, build up distance. But these things, speed and distance, should be completely thrown out the door. These things are completely irrelevant when you're first starting out. Just get in tune to how your body's aligning itself on these harder surfaces. Breathe. That's my advice.
That's great advice, especially about the breathing. That's so important to remember. A lot of people tend to kind of tense up when they're doing something that's physically difficult. And the breathing, it opens up your lungs, relaxes your body. It's so important.
Yes.
We have a question from one of our listeners. His name is Zach, and he says that he has been competing in track and long distance for about 2 years now, and he just finished his first half marathon, and he is wanting to know what your secret to running such long distances is.
Oh, wow. Hey, Zach, great question, man. Yeah, I come from a background similar to yours, a track and field background, where I was running a lot of my intervals and you know, times of 60 seconds for 400, 25 seconds for 200. So I definitely understand where you're coming from. So I give you major props to transitioning into longer distances. So I really didn't have any type of any specific event that I was training for when I made the transition. And I think that was absolutely paramount in developing a solid foundation when I started my barefoot journey. I slowly started becoming comfortable with running distances of 2 to 4 miles. When I started running 4 miles, I then started experimenting with 5 miles, 6 miles. After about 5 months of going from 2 mile barefoot run, after about, you know, 4 or 5 months, I was able to then do a 7 mile barefoot run. But I can't emphasize enough how my mindset wasn't set on any type of distance. I naturally wanted to see and push my own limits, so I think that was the motivating factor to increase the distance. So my advice to you is, if you want to increase your distance, just go ahead and gently test the waters. Don't do anything that your body isn't ready for. And what I mean by that, you know, mentally you can think that you're ready for a big distance and you can get really excited thinking about it. But really tune into how you feel during your training runs. If you're going out for a 5 mile run, does it feel like you could possibly, is there a potential to possibly go for a 6 mile? If there is, then maybe after about a week of being comfortable with that 5 mile distance, then try for a 6 to 7 mile barefoot run. I can recall the first time when I bumped up my distance a little too quick, how much pain I was in. My feet were aching. You know, I had been pretty comfortable running about 20 miles barefoot a week. And then I tried to throw in that long run and I was out. I was out of commission for roughly, you know, 3 or 4 days, barely able to walk. So my advice is just to slowly build up that base. But yes, it can be done. Yeah, I went from you know, roughly 10 miles a week barefoot to 50 miles a week, feeling pretty fluent to, yeah, then able to qualify for the Boston Marathon barefoot. So, yeah, I definitely think you're in the right direction, Zach. Just stay steady and stay diligent along the path.
He has a follow-up question. What is your fastest time for running 1 mile?
Ooh. Barefoot or just in general?
In general, or barefoot, if there's a difference.
Yeah, there's a little bit of, I believe I clocked my fastest mile at 4:16.
Wow. That's really impressive.
Yeah, thanks.
Much faster than my fastest.
That's about how long it takes me to get from my bedroom to the front door.
That was only one time, though. That was only one time. Yeah, that was an experience that I was really excited for. That was actually during college. I had always run the 800 meters. I was a half miler in high school and in college. So bumping up to the mile was that, in my mind, that was long distance. So. So I was happy to make it, that I was able to make it happen that day.
That was that with shoes on?
Yeah, that was just in like a, I think I was wearing a Nike Air Kennedy track spike, just like a really minimal track sole, like probably like 1 millimeter with some spike. So you pretty much could call it just like a thin outsole with a pair of spikes on it.
And what's your fastest barefoot mile?
Ooh, you know, that's a really good question. I don't believe I've ever, I think I've messed around just for fun, like running, you know, a couple mile, you know, just something like sub-5. I haven't raced it or anything, but I know that I've ripped off a couple in interval training, sub-five minute miles barefoot. But yeah, I'm not quite sure. I think maybe, Sierra, maybe you put me up to a challenge right there. How fast can I run barefoot? I'm not quite, 1 mile barefoot. I'm not quite sure.
Well, we've got,
you've probably never run just 1 mile. You've got about 5 minutes till our next ad break. You can go run a mile and tell us.
Yeah,
but we have another question from another listener here from Kevin's. He says, I've been running barefoot 9 months and I just increased my mileage to 4 miles last week. Am I going to slow increasing my distance or am I fine where I'm at?
Kevin, great question. I feel that you're on the right track right now, especially if you've been doing this for 9 months. I feel that if you've been doing it correctly, then you really started understanding the connection between your training and how your body feels. So I encourage you to continue that furthering that relationship with your body. If you feel as if it's a good opportunity to increase the mileage, I think that it possibly is the right idea. If you feel good at 4 miles, maybe just add some walking in after you do 4 miles. Maybe you can walk that final mile, the fifth mile, barefoot. See how that walking feels. During that time when you're walking, you feel, hey, maybe I have a little bit in me. Then go ahead and try to throw in a little bit of jogging. I'll give you this wisdom that Ken Bob Saxon gave to us. It's that after each run, you should be left with a feeling of being refreshed. The exhausted feeling, the feeling of going all out and having dead legs after training, though it's important if you're doing interval training or any type of, you know, speed work, but the idea of being exhausted after every run is it's counterproductive. So if after every single run that you go out there, you feel refreshed, you feel rejuvenated, then you're in a really good spot. So use that good feeling, that refreshed, rejuvenated sensation as a guidepost to see whether or not it's a good idea to increase that day's mileage. But I think you're in really good position, Kevin. I say go for, if you're feeling good for 4, go out and try a 6 mile barefoot run. I think you're probably ready for it.
John, did you have any follow-up questions for Alex?
Well, I think his advice was great. Even if you're not a runner, just trying to go barefoot, you know, to take it slow and, you know, let your body tell you how far you can go is great advice. I guess the only question I have, since I'm not truly really a runner, is you go on these 20-mile runs, what do you do once you're 20 miles away from where you started? Or do you have a pattern where you get back or what?
John, that's a great question. Yeah. I aim to tailor my courses, my running routes, so that they're out and back. So if I go for a 20, then I'll run out for 10 and then follow that same route or establish a route that takes me back home in the same equivalent. So yeah, I usually do down and backs, but if I'm lucky enough, I have a buddy that says, yeah, I'll drive out 20 miles. You just run to me. Sometimes that happens. I just run out to my buddy's house and then they can just drive me back. So
yeah, that's cool.
Good,
yeah, at my
question.
Age, if I was to plan a route, it would have to have about 20 bathrooms to go that far.
Well, I like the wooded areas because I just use nature as my bathroom.
There you go.
I mean,
there you go, Sierra. Now you know what to do.
Yeah. I there's not a whole lot of trees where I live. I live in the Canadian Badlands. Like, just prairie grass. So that wouldn't really work for me. I mean, there's no one out there to see me but the deer and the bears, but still, nothing. We do have one more question. Do you use any sort of mapping software or apps to plan your routes? And if so, what are they?
To tell you the truth, I don't. There was a time period maybe 6 years ago where I was using a Garmin, one of those GPS Garmins. But I kind of fell out of contact with that after I lost it. I placed it on a table and walked away from it. When I came back, it was gone. So I never replaced it. And since that time, I've really just kind of been one to just let my body go out and go where it may. One of the really fun things that I enjoy about running is somewhat the unpredictability of what the run will turn out as. So, yeah, I'm not at the moment using anything to map my run or to even time my run. I just go out there and just kind of see how I'm feeling that day. And if my body wants to go left, I just let it go left. Or if it wants to go right, it'll go right. And in that way, I feel real rejuvenated after spending all those years looking at a watch for timing intervals during my track career. And one of the great things about being barefoot was that it just gave me time to just focus on being more present in my body rather than looking at a time, looking at split. So I'm still feeling that out and not using anything right now in terms of an app, but I think they're beneficial. They definitely help monitor things. But at the moment, yeah, I'm just a little bit outside of that at the time.
All right. John, did you have any more questions? You there, John?
Yeah, sorry. I know we need to take a commercial break. Will you be here when we come back?
Oh, yeah, I can be here. Definitely. For sure.
All right. So we're going to have to jump to the commercial.
All right. Yeah, so we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more questions for Alex. If you have any questions, you can post them in the chat room. You can tweet them to us at Sierra Barefoot or at Flip Top Barefoot, and we'll get your questions. Or you can call into the show and ask Alex yourself, 347-324-3704, and then push extension 1 so we know you want to chat with Alex. So we'll be right back.
Very cool.
This is Renaissance Revolution. We'll be talking about everything. You don't need an employer, a college, a healthcare bill, a doctor, a financial planner, a preacher, a prophet, or anything else. You can do it all. You do need to hear my show. You don't want to hear me? Fine. Don't listen to my show. You want to now, don't you?
I like the way you grow it, no pesticides. I got to box it up. Yeah. I like the way you grow it, so locally. I got to box it up. I like the way you grow it, with no GMOs. I like the way you twerk it, no diggity, no doubt.
We've got squash and peas, pollinate a bag for all your bees. Melons you'll want to squeeze, yes please, yes please.
Hey now, that plant looks good. I want to grow it, I want to taste it. Plant Fair 2014.
Yeah.
Search YouTube for Freaks of the Garden. PeacefulBelly.com. Support your local organic farmer.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Welcome back to Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host, John, and our special guest this week, Barefoot Alex, who we've been chatting with about his long-distance, super, super long-distance barefoot running. He just finished running across America. He did 1,000 miles of that barefoot, which is amazing. I've maybe run 1,000 steps in a row barefoot. But, you know, building up your resistance, it can be done, which is super, super inspiring.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. We've got, I just want to review an article here that kind of ties in with this. In May, Men's Health published an article about training barefoot. They interviewed a physical therapist named Martin Rooney, and he said that you should always do push-ups, weightlifting, lunges, and running barefoot, because it will basically increase the effectiveness of your workout, you'll have more stability, and you can have more range of motion by being barefoot, because your toes will also get the flexion. And, you know, we read that tweet earlier about how even Nike, the shoe company, is saying that you should train barefoot because your feet are the foundation of the training for your whole body. And so, Alex, I was wondering, what benefits have you seen in training barefoot for your running versus when you were running in shoes?
Yeah, that's a great question. The overwhelming noticeable effect that I've seen barefoot take on my whole approach to movement is that my balance has improved tenfold. It was as though, you know, I was able to still perform exercises, whether it was weightlifting, whether it was hiking, whether it was running well in shoes, but I didn't know the level of balance that I've gained from barefoot, being barefoot, I didn't know that it existed to this degree. I feel that this balance has allowed me to feel much more comfortable in my fluid motion, regardless of what I'm doing, whether I'm biking, whether I'm sitting down in a chair, if it's meditating, if it's stretching. I feel that balance kind of encompasses all movement. And by being barefoot, I'm able to naturally align myself with my natural posture. So when I'm really feeling in tune, then it feels really, really good. It's like when the supreme balance is achieved, so you feel like you can kind of ride a skateboard one leg, you can go out on a unicycle and do all these other things. So like a whole new world is opened up by this newfound balance, and I attribute it all to transitioning to being barefoot.
That's excellent. Those are great benefits.
As well, how has running barefoot influenced the rest of your life as far as things you would do barefoot?
Ooh, that's a really great question as well, John. Thanks. I feel that by really, you know, surrendering to the journey of being barefoot, I've cultivated a stronger sense of what it means to be patient. I'm born under the zodiac of Aries, so by nature I'm a fire sign that always wants to be on the go, move. So when I tried to use that approach towards being barefoot in the initial phases of the transition, I met a lot of resistance. And I think Sierra, John, and myself, I think we all realized, you know, that by doing too much too soon, you really immobilize yourself. Whether you step on something sharp, your soles are super sensitive the day after. I realized that I had to slow down, that I had to be patient with the transition. And that journey of patience has really opened me up to, I feel it's really helped me become a better person, you know. So through naturally my passion for running, when I attribute my success to is by being patient, is to just realizing that, hey, this is something that's fun, this is enjoyable. So barefoot running has really helped me fall in love with my running again. And you think that it's, what, just by taking off your shoes, you found all that? It's like, yeah, really kind of has been the foundation for that happiness.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. It helps to make you live in the moment. You can put yourself on autopilot when you have this. It's like shoes are insulating you from the world a lot of times.
Yeah, well, I have a saying. I always say free your feet and your mind will follow, because Ooh. You've got all this more sensory input coming in through your feet being exposed and open and available to take so much more of the world in, that it wakes up your brain, in my experience.
Yes, I like how you say that, Sierra. And John, absolutely right. Yeah, if you think about barefoot running, maybe in terms of how it relates to a video game, you think about maybe the classic video game, hopefully everyone remembers this video game, Sonic the Hedgehog, where you're kind of running, you're kind of using Sonic to go on this path, but you have to divert certain things so you don't step on them, because if you do step on those things, you lose all your rings, right? So it's like you're really in the present moment, trying to navigate on paths that might have debris on them. It feels like you're kind of your own character in a video game, kind of sidestepping these obstacles to find the cleanest line, the cleanest path. I love that. Both of you guys are very wise. That's awesome.
Well, I love that you bring up Sonic. There's a new version of the Sonic games that just came out, and they do have a barefoot character in them. She's a robot, but she's barefoot.
A barefoot robot.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that the robot would get the same benefits that humans do, but hey, it's a start. The portrayal
like
in the media is so... Yeah, it doesn't really do anything to the barefoot robot. She might actually run down the bottoms of her robot shoes more, but... I don't know.
Sierra, earlier you mentioned, you know, the brain and everything. Did you know that in modern society, the average brain is actually decreased by like 10%? And they attribute it to not having to, you know, hunt and gather and think about things and solve problems. And I think going barefoot helps to supplement that. It truly is causing people to lose their mind.
Wow.
By wearing shoes.
I think there have been studies as well that were recently published in March and April of this year on livescience.com. They published this study. But a lot of like modern life things actually do end up shrinking your brain cells. Air pollution,
exactly.
Birth control pills, sleep problems, stress, smoking cannabis. I mean, yeah, there are other health benefits of these things, except for the air pollution. But, I mean, all of these things that are these modern innovations are turning out to be actually, you know, harmful for us, whereas something so primal and like age old as going barefoot reverses these changes, can give you so many health benefits. It's just, it's incredible.
Yeah, maybe to add to that too, it's like the I can't speak from any type of authority in this, but the science of reflexology that maps out all of our internal organs, it's mapped out in different places on our feet. Like you have the heart and like the sole of the foot, the pineal gland, and like the tip of the big toe. Your heart's there. So it's like, yeah, if you're actively engaging those thousands of sensors on the bottom of your feet, it's like, wow, yeah, you're activating and turning on and stimulating parts of your body that you probably didn't know you were. Like this well-being that we feel is no accident. When we're barefoot, like we're putting ourselves into perfect alignment with body and turning it on. It's like, that is really excellent. And think how it's free and it's easy to get into. I love that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like if you look at a reflexology map of the bottom of the feet, pretty much everything except for the digestion part of your body is getting a reflexology just by walking. And it's only because the digestive system is in the arch of the foot, you know, the stomach, the renal gland, liver, kidneys, all that is in the arch. But everything else in your body, in the toes, in the ball of your foot, in the heel, you know, even hemorrhoids, you can help according to a reflexology chart by going barefoot and stimulating those points. And it's incredible.
A little different take on it. I've got a theory that's way out there, but it does fit in. You know, you think about all of those different parts of your body, all those organs being connected through your feet. And then you think about every person has 90 trillion, and that's a huge number, you know, not billion, but trillion microorganisms on them or in them at any given time. And you look at nature, everything in nature has a purpose. I believe that they're in communication with some of these, kind of like sensors, kind of like in your car, you know, when you put in the little thing to check, you know, how everything's running in the car. I think it provides feedback. To give an example, like I know in the animal world, I do pet rescue, so I know that like with a cat, they have cat grass. And a cat will only eat it if it has a lack of that particular, if it has a need for it, if it's lacking the what it gets from that. It's the only time it will eat it. And I often wonder if it's like, what's giving them that, you know, telling the brain to do that? And maybe it's as simple as these microorganisms working together actually complete circuits. Just like computers or something. I know I'm way out there, but you know, anything's possible.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. So it's like, are you saying like by like conscious contact with the ground? Do you feel that it, like these microorganisms? Do you think that they can actually like travel up through the soul in? You know, reach a portion of the body that then would manifest as like imagery in your mind's eye? Like, do you think that it holds that power? Is that what you're saying?
I kind of compare it to electronic circuits. You know, if you think of it like transistors and diodes and, you know, integrated circuits, that I think they form connections. By themselves, they look like a simple organism that can't do much. But I believe, you know, why are they there? Why is there 90 trillion microorganisms? And it's a proven fact that if we eliminate a lot of them, we'd be dead. We have more DNA in us that's not us than that is. So, you know, to me, there has to be a purpose. And I might be not in the right track for it. What you're saying may be just, that may be what it is. I don't know. But my personal thought is it's kind of like creating, you know, like its own circuits through your body, And, you know, maybe it's like, since everything's connected through your feet, it may be getting information from the ground to help you, you know, to improve yourself, things, you know, like an upgrade or an update. And if something's wrong with you, it may say, okay, send this signal to your brain that you better eat more vegetables or something, you know.
Well, and also, it's been proven that bacteria communicate with each other. And so,
exactly.
I mean, this is a stretch, but maybe the bacteria on the ground are communicating with the bacteria in your body and letting your body know about some external force that's happening. You know, there are people that say that they can tell when the weather's about to change because they can just feel it. You know, maybe it's something like that. Or maybe it's something like how when a mother is nursing her child, the hormones in her body get passed through to the baby and stimulate the same parts of the brain that the mother is. Like if the mother is having a lot of stress, those stress hormones get passed. If the mother's tired, the melatonin gets passed to the baby. I mean, everything in the mom gets passed to the baby. So maybe it's something like that, that these microbes on the ground are somehow passing through the bare feet and changing the chemical signals that are being sent by the other bacteria. I mean, there's still so much that we don't know about this world that, I mean, I kind of feel like anything's possible.
Exactly. I mean, we could go on forever with it. I kind of feel like it's like we're part of the true World Wide Web. You know, you look at history and all over the world, how many things developed at virtually the same time. Or even changes in our bodies on different continents at all roughly the same time, within a couple hundred years of each other, which is nothing, you know, compared to the time on Earth. I look at it as like you have a cell phone and it's hardwired, and it when it has reached the end of its life, when they've developed a better cell phone, you go out and get one of those. But with a living organism, I'm thinking that the circuits are fluid, that when there's something new that's learned, it can create new circuits. So you're not getting a new, you know, cell phone in your body. It creates the new circuits that will now perform those functions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's remarkable. So I think we're on to something there. That's oof. Wow.
Pretty out there, I know. Yeah, I get pretty out there sometimes, but
I appreciate that.
We're getting borderline quantum physics there.
Yeah, back to your journey though, it's pretty amazing. You know, 1,000 miles. I'm still having. I mean, myself and Sierra mentioned after a few miles, I can remember doing events that are a Saturday and Sunday, and if I overdid it on a Saturday, which would probably be the equivalent of a few miles. You know, it was borderline whether I could do the Sunday or not, you know. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, I appreciate it, John.
Well, Alex, are there any other comments that you want to add? Our show's going to need to wrap up pretty quick, but if you have any other comments you feel like you haven't been able to say yet?
Really, I just want to express my gratitude for all the questions that I was asked on behalf of your listeners and both John and yourself, Sierra. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. It's a rarity in my day that I can talk with kindred spirits about being barefoot. And this is one of those moments in life where it's just really nice to be in a community of people that share this passion, that see its importance, that are out there actually doing it. So I just want to say, you know, from my heart, I consider everyone listening, John, Sierra, you're a part of my family. So I just want to say thank you, okay?
Well, thank you so
much for coming on.
I see the same thing, you know, being able to talk. That's the thing when we talk about the things we've learned from going barefoot, it's hard to have a conversation with somebody else and really convey that if they haven't had that experience. So you're exactly right.
Yes. Yes.
And if our listeners would like to contact you on social media, how can they reach you?
Yeah, most definitely. I go by the name Barefoot Alex on Facebook. So you can just type in Barefoot Alex in your search, and I'll pop up on Facebook. Twitter, I'm also at Barefoot Alex. And on Instagram, I go by Shoeless Alexander. And if you want to, I also have a Tumblr out there, too. And I just changed the name of, it was barefootalex.com. But if you just type Barefoot Alex into Google, it should be probably like the third hit. I also want to know if anybody wants some really, really cool handmade running-inspired tie-dyes that are absolutely phenomenal. Check out my website, www.runnershightiedye.com, to get all your funky tie-dye needs. I can take care of those for you.
The t-shirts are really cool. He's got pictures of them on his Facebook, and they're pretty awesome.
Thanks, Sierra. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
well, thank you again so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you. We do need to wrap up the show. We've got the 3-minute warning in the studio flashing at me.
Yeah. All right. Well, enjoy your days, everyone. It was nice. Keep it barefoot. Land lightly.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Bye, Alex.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. See you.
So that was the immense pleasure we had of interviewing Barefoot Alex. Like he mentioned earlier, he and I were in a Huffington Post live interview together. I think that was actually last July, if I remember correctly. He said it was December. Maybe it was sometime in between. I don't really remember. Either way, you can look up that interview as well if you go to Huff Post Live in Google, even probably. HUFFPOST, all one word, and then live. It'll bring up their website, live.huffingtonpost.com. And then they have a search feature where you can search and find the Huffington Post interview that we were in together last year. See if I can find it really quick. And it doesn't pull up right away. Yeah, here it is. It's going barefoot, best for your health. And it's just starts playing right away. But yeah, it's on live.huffingtonpost.com is going barefoot best for your health. That was the interview that we were in together, and that was July 8th, 2014. So if you would like to look that up, you can learn more about Barefoot Alex. Again, get with him on Twitter, on Facebook, or Instagram, or Tumblr, like he said with those earlier. Getting the get off the air voice in my ear here. So we're going to bid a fond farewell to all of our listeners. Thank you, everyone who asked questions for Alex. Make sure if you're on freedomizerradio.com that you refresh your browser once this broadcast ends so that you can get the next show. Otherwise, we'll just replay. I know you love us, but give the other guys that you love a listen as well. It is, I believe, Sound on next. So until next week, stay barefoot. Tune in next week for another awesome guest. We're trying to get a lady who fought the system in order to be able to be barefoot at work on the air. So hopefully we can get her on. If not, we'll have someone else super awesome for you. Until next week, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Great show. Great guest. I really enjoyed the show.